Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
I do not understand, outside of vengeance, if there's no water to be gained, why does this happen? Why now are people being sued?
You know, there's a lot of fluidity here. So, you know, I would hope that we do get, a scenario where this bill is either withdrawn or dies a natural death or gets voted down. That would be, you know, a definite path forward for the community to revisit, those implementation agreements.
This is a bill that I am not enthusiastically very supportive of because it is a 1% sales tax. But what I'm not enthusiastically supportive of is the fact that our kids are in classrooms right now and they don't have the resources that they need.
I think there's an appetite for someone who's just going to fight for everyday Arizonans, and that may be a progressive quote-unquote label, but I think people, you talk to them every day, don't define it as that. They just say, like, they just want someone to fight for them.
And with us to talk about some of the latest legislative news, as well as a possible other entrant into Arizona's U.S. Senate race sometime soon, and a lot more, Jaime Molera of Molera Alvarez and Sam Richard of Creosote Partners. Guys, welcome back. Thanks
Great
for being
to
here.
See you.
Great to be here.
All right, Sam, let's talk about the possibility of this education funding compromise. We have a series of Republicans, some on the very conservative side and some more in the middle, who are saying, yes, let's get the penny sales tax. Let's do this. Are you surprised that there'd be a compromise this early in the session? How does it look as far as we heard Reginald Boulding there? Not quite sure he wants to go along with it.
Yeah, I think what's important here is who or whom are the responsible parties are responsible for making the compromise at this time, right? We're talking about trying to get to 16 votes in the Senate, 31 votes in the House, and potentially, you know, some involvement from the governor's office. That is very different than trying to get to a million and a half votes out of the ballot. So trying to get to a compromise at the legislature is very different than trying to get something that's politically palatable for voters across Arizona.
I mean, what do you think about this? Obviously, the sales tax increase has been talked about for quite a while.
Right. Well, I think the hard part of this, making the finish line, is that you're going to have both extremes. I mean, I think on the left, it's been talked about as being too regressive, and there's a lot of concern over that. On the right, they just don't want any kind of a tax increase. So I'll be interested to see if that helps to defeat it. I mean, if there's enough in the middle that can help, you know, steer this thing over the finish line.
Do you think the fact that you have sort of two sides of the GOP coming together on a compromise, does that help it, at least in the legislative process?
I think it does. You know, Kate Brophy McGee has proven herself to be a very skilled legislator. And I think it will help her by working with Sylvia Allen, where maybe she can get to some of those conservatives I was talking about that might be a heck no on any kind of a tax increase. And if that's the case, I think Kate also has a very strong relationship with a lot of the Democrats, right? They're working together on a number of things, a number of issues. So that could be something that could be a big help.
And Sam, is this the kind of thing where Democrats might be like a hold your nose and vote yes kind of thing?
I think if it's just a straight sales tax, it would be very difficult for anybody to hold their nose. I think that's where the compromise is coming from, right? What types of particular programs are funded and how exactly things are funded. But as Jaime pointed out, I mean, this is a very regressive, idea of the use tax only, and to only have that be part of the conversation, I think is detrimental for progressives and even those just to the left of center.
Well, no, and just you know, I didn't say it was regressive. I said the Democrats are saying it's regressive. I like use taxes, but one of the things that is interesting, just from a raw politics, this is the number one issue that Democrats have, and it could be a very powerful, potent issue in 2020. And if this were to happen, this takes a lot of the steam out of that political pressure valve that's building up. And I think if I was some of the Republicans, I would welcome this with both arms.
Jaime, though you're coming at this from the Republican point of view, we also know about your history having been superintendent of public instruction.
Right.
How much money, just throw out a number, how much money does the state really need? Because we hear about an extra $400 million, which sounds like a tremendous amount of money, but in the big picture, it really isn't that much.
Well, and I think there's two areas that we need to be looking at. One is capital, infrastructure. You have a lot of schools out there that are in continual need of repair. The problem with capital in Arizona is if you have wealth and you're from a property-rich district, it's not an issue. but you have a lot of districts that don't have the property wealth. And so that's the problem. That's always been, we created a system, the School Facilities Board, to help alleviate that. I'm not sure it's been funded the way it should have been. So those are the two things, you know, how much money we need for teachers and teacher salary to be more competitive, and then the large capital issues that we have to deal with.
Sam, what does 2020 look like potentially? I mean, if let's say there is a sales tax increase on the ballot, does there also have to be something like an invest in ed?
I think that we definitely need to have all options at the table at this point, because 2020 is still a long ways away. Even if January 2020 is still, you know, only 10 months away, where November of 2020, a lot can change between now and then. But I mean, you know, we had 75,000 teachers at the Capitol just 6 months ago, right? And that energy is still very much alive and well. And we're looking at all sorts of different ways to comprehensively fund education. And we definitely use a lot of numbers when we're talking about both in the past and also what to do in the future. But I think at the bottom line, everyone at the Capitol and a lot of voters across Arizona understand that we need more resources and a dedicated funding source for public education in Arizona.
Sam, continuing to put the cart a little bit before the horse here, I mean, is there a danger, let's say a sales tax increase goes to the ballot, is there a danger if you put another kind of revenue generating source on the ballot as well, that voters are confused? They say, well, why are we doing this two different ways, and maybe just vote both down?
I mean, I think all of those hypotheticals are possible, and I think that that's one of the reasons why starting the conversations and starting the compromise at the legislature is important, because then you have that grass top support, and then maybe some of those conversations don't get confused because everyone's kind of singing from the same page of the hymnal.
Jaime, where does the governor come in on this? How important is he in this equation?
He's very important. As you recall, you know, if governors are not typically, and I've never seen this to be otherwise, if a governor is not supportive of a tax increase, it just doesn't happen. So it'll be interesting to see if and when the governor starts to engage in this. I think they need to look at this very carefully, because remember, because of this compromise of bringing together the kind of the right and the moderate part of the Republican Party, he needs to be careful by not creating a wedge if he were to come down on any particular side.
How do you see him sort of playing this? Because he's, of course, said, I will not sign new taxes. I do not favor new taxes. Is there a way for him to sort of support this and still maintain his pledge of not raising taxes?
Well, I think a lot of that is going to come down to what happens with a lot of the business groups, too. I think if the business community sees this as an opportunity to succeed, and I think more and more groups, at least that I'm affiliated with, are starting to see this as a viable option, then I think there could be ways to persuade him that this could be something, if it's done right and if it's tied with other kinds of accountability reforms, I think that could be a pretty good and powerful package.
Yeah, and I think for me, one of the things that my mind goes to here is that the late George H.W. Bush said, read my lips, before his reelection. Right? I think that now Governor Ducey has been reelected to a very overwhelming margin, and he has the ability to add some nuance to his previous comments about what he has been so hard pressed on about not raising taxes. And I think that we have a lot of space and a lot of room for him to operate in a political environment where he can support a question going to the voters that would raise taxes, because he has been a very loud and important voice in conversations around education funding.
Gentlemen, let's move on to another big issue of the week that, at least for now, has been quelled, and that is House Speaker Rusty Bowers having concern with the Gila River Indian community, water usage, who gets to use it, whether farmers are being pressured, and that is another sort of possible wrench as far as the drought contingency plan goes. I mean, what about Rusty Bowers has been around a long time, and right. We all know him pretty well. Was this a valid concern of his? Was the timing wrong?
Well, you know, his bill that threatened the Gila River Indian community to pull out of the DCP, signing it and moving forward with it, had nothing to do with DCP. But it was more about the argument over the years, and certainly Rusty Bowers is known to be a very known to be an expert on water issues. He doesn't like a lot of the what has happened at the federal level of a lot of the water rights going to the Gila Rivers. He disputes that. And I think he was trying to introduce legislation that would codify his line of thinking. So I'm not so sure. I mean, this is going to get played out in the courts. I mean, I know there's ongoing lawsuits. Part of that, right. The Arizona Supreme Court's probably going to rule on this sometime this year. And that's where it deserves to play out. I'm not sure that this was something that once we had this great coalition that was put together, business, agricultural groups, and finally moving forward, it would have been a shame to see this fall apart so quickly. But luckily, it didn't.
Yeah. What about Speaker Bowers in this, Sam?
I think there's a couple of interesting things just at play if you zoom out. I mean, one, grateful for 30-plus inches at Flagstaff. The snowpack's good, so we're done. We aren't going to hit 1075 at Lake Mead for a while. I think what's interesting is, and I'm not anywhere near a legislative historian, but I think the last time that a Speaker of the House has assigned themselves to a committee of reference has been Jake Flake, which was quite a long time ago. And I think that has really added an additional dynamic here. Regardless of whether or not the ideas that Speaker Bowers was bringing have merit, the fact that it is the Speaker that is on a committee that is working on some of these ideas is really kind of making the issues much more complex.
I mean, we talked about the governor's role with education funding. I'm curious about the governor's role here as well, because right. The Gila River Indian community, their leaders are saying, look, it's great that this bill is dead for now, but, you know, there's nothing that says they can't try another bill or some other way to do this. Does the governor have a role to play here to say that if it is in my power, you know, I know you guys are concerned about how this will impact your water, and, you know, if this goes forward, you might pull out of the DCP. If it is within my power in any way, I will make sure this doesn't happen.
Well, short answer, yes. Certainly the governor has a major role to play. But let's remember there's a number of other issues that have split the Republican Party, one of which is tax conformity. Rusty Bowers helped lead the charge to say we are going to have tax conformity that mirrors what the federal government did, which would end up reducing taxes and reducing revenue, I should say. And the governor said, no, we don't need to do that. That's too much. So he vetoed that bill, which angered the Republicans. So there's a lot of things going on right now. I don't think the governor wants to step into yet another battle when they still have to do the budget, when they still have to figure out what's going to happen with education finance, when they still have to figure out a number of other issues down the line. I think the governor's trying to be somewhat guarded on how he gets into these kinds of fights.
I definitely think that this is a new paradigm for the governor and really a new paradigm for the legislature. I mean, we definitely have two distinct branches of government, but to a large extent, they have been two branches of government that have been headed in the same direction for, you know, the last decade and a half, maybe more. Mm-hmm. So now that there is an opportunity for, you know, these fissures that have been able to be kind of walked over and sealed over in the past, they're turning into larger cracks. And I think that outside forces and inside forces are trying to expose those cracks and try and take advantage of the opportunities.
That's Sam Richard. Also here is Hyman Molera with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. It is the Friday Newscap, which continues after this. Good morning. It's the Friday Newscap on KJZZ 91.5 in Phoenix with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our panelists today, Jaime Molera of Molera Alvarez and Sam Richard of Creosote Partners. Jaime, let's close out our legislative discussion with SB 1217. Has to do with tuition for DACA students. Heather Carter, heavily involved in this. Is this something that could potentially work? Give us some background on it, considering especially we've seen lawsuits with the Attorney General. We've seen correct. The Board of Regents, the Community College District.
Well, what this does, it's a fairly ingenious idea Heather Carter has been pushing on, and I've been working with her with a number of business organizations that want to see this happen, is creating an Arizona graduation rate for any student that's graduated from Arizona public or private schools. And this would also apply to kids that may have left the state, gone into the military, gone to a different school, but then want to come back and may have lost their residency status. And able to get this rate that could be set by the Board of Regents and set by the individual community college districts, it maybe not at in-state tuition rates, but something comparable and something that could be workable. And that way, it doesn't violate Proposition 300 and doesn't violate, in many people's opinion, some of the lawsuits that have been put out. But it really is one of the things that I think these business groups have been pushing that says, look, let's make these students an ability to have a higher education degree so that they can become more contributors to our economy and not users of the social welfare system. And I think that's something why business groups are saying this has to happen.
Sam, politically, what's going on with this?
Yeah, I think that really what's emerging out of here is just Heather Carter's leadership on this issue and a variety of other issues that she's really taken the charge on this session, but this one in particular. And I think what's really exciting is that now in a relatively smaller chamber, right, when she was one of 60, she had this drive, she had this motive. But now that she's one of 30, she's really had a chance to really kind of spread her wings and really take the lead on this issue. And, you know, she's getting hit from all sides by taking this, and she damn the torpedoes, full steam ahead. And I think that that's great, and that says a lot about what her future is going to be as a member of the Arizona State Senate.
I mean, when you look at what this rate might actually be, how do you think it sort of falls in line, or maybe doesn't fall in line, with what the Board of Regents instituted just a little while back?
It's actually very similar, and I think Heather used that as a model on how you could craft this and look at how you can create state statute that could help codify those kinds of things.
Guys, let's move on to the U.S. Senate. There's not any news yet, but we still
check.
We get the feeling that Congressman Ruben Gallego is itching to get into the Democratic U.S. Senate primary. Mark Kelly, now the official candidate at this point. Sam, what do you think is going on in terms of Gallego's calculations right now?
I think that he's definitely doing a lot of those calculations, potentially even as we speak. But I really do believe that Ruben is likely to run. I think that primaries are very healthy. I think the Democratic Party would benefit from a very robust and healthy primary. We have a Democratic base that's hungry for someone who has an established track record as a Democrat, you know, who has voting records that you can kind of dig into. And this doesn't take anything away at all from Mark Kelly. He's a absolutely fantastic candidate that brings a lot to the race. But the fact is we don't really know a lot about some of the really important positions that I think the Democratic base is interested to hear about.
Now, Sam, you're an open-minded fellow, and I appreciate your attitude on it. But you know that primary battles can sometimes get kind of nasty.
Yes.
And that can also reveal some weaknesses of your eventual nominee.
Right.
So that can be worrisome, right?
Yeah, but I think that's also why primaries are helpful, because if you believe for a second that those weaknesses aren't going to come out in the general, if they don't come out in the primary, that's happened, right? And I think that Governor Fred Duvall has a lot to say about that. And I think just in general, right? I mean, I think primaries are extremely helpful and healthy.
Jaime, how do you, from, like, if you're Martha McSally, are you hoping? I assume you're hoping.
She doesn't think primaries are helpful or healthy, by the way.
No, but she probably thinks primaries on the Democratic side are helpful and healthy.
Oh, absolutely. Right? She thinks that's probably the healthiest thing that could happen. You know, Martha McSally is going to have a very tough race. I mean, you look at just the lay of the landscape, right? 2020, you're going to have a presidential turnout. Where you're going to see yet another high, massively high voter turnout, which tends to benefit Democrats in Arizona. So I think what she would like to see is as much as possible fissures occur. I think she wants to see Ruben Gallego jump into this race, because right now Mark Kelly is seen as this great, you know, above the fray. I think she wants to see him being pulled into the more left side of the Democrat camp and allows her to attack him a little bit better in the general.
Yeah, Sam, I wanted to ask you about that, because people have kept talking about the playbook that Kyrsten Sinema used to win her Senate race, and part of that playbook was not having a really competitive primary. Do you think that there's a chance, as Jaime alluded to, that having a primary like that could really weaken whoever the eventual Democratic nominee is against Martha McSally?
Yeah, so I don't mean to be like that guy, but I just want to push back a little bit on the premise, only because I think that Kyrsten's playbook was a winning playbook, but it also was built on the fact that Kyrsten is a once-in-a-generation politician who has really built for the last decade plus what happened this last cycle, and no one can replicate that, right? If you don't have Belichick and Brady, it doesn't matter if you have the Patriots playbook. So I think, to a certain extent, I just want to push back on that. Senator Sinema's playbook is replicable by anyone who is ready to jump in to a U.S. Senate race.
Jaime, what do you think about the fact that the timing of Mark Kelly's announcement after Grant Woods getting out? Would Grant Woods have made this a more interesting race, not just for Democrats, but for Republicans as well?
I think it would have made a very interesting race, just because it's Grant Woods. You know, Grant Woods brings a lot of things to the table that otherwise, you know, a lot of candidates don't have. But again, I think Martha McSally would love to see Mr. Gallego get into this race, Congressman Gallego jump in. But she would also love to see Grant Woods get into this race. She'd also love to see as many Democrats as possible trying to battle each other and fight it out. The thing in Arizona that's a little bit different with our primary is that it happens so late. A lot of times that when candidates do beat each other up, which happened with Martha McSally and Kelly Ward, Sinema was able to capitalize on it because McSally didn't have enough time to distance herself from that hard right persona that she took on in order to win the primary. So that's the one difficulty we have in Arizona. Unlike other states where they have the primaries in May, you can kind of reinvent yourself by the time November comes around. Here, we only have a month before early ballots hit, so it's very difficult to reverse course.
We've been talking about primaries on the Democratic side. Jaime, do you think there's any chance we see a primary on the Republican side as well?
I don't think so. With Kelly Ward now becoming the state party chairman, I think that effectively removes her from the equation, and she certainly would have been one of the top people looking at this. Who's to say that she might jump in again? Because remember, this Senate seat, because of John McCain's passing, we had that special election that happened this last time around. Or excuse me, the appointment by Governor Ducey, but then you have to have this election this time around, which is the next general. But then you have to go back to the normal cycle that John McCain was
to
on.
To win the full 6 years.
Mm-hmm. So it'll be back again in 2022. So that's where you might see, and Sam has been talking about it, an opportunity for that maybe hardcore Republican, if they don't like what McSally's doing, to jump in at that point.
Sam, as frustrated as Democrats were when McSally got the appointment, are you happy to see Democrats get another crack at her?
Yeah, I think definitely, and actually to that point, I'm not sure how frustrated actually many Democrats were on the political side. I think from a policy perspective, obviously, I think that, you know, that took the wind out of the sails of Senator Sinema's victory in a certain sense. But from a purely political perspective in the 2020 cycle, I think that some Democrats were fairly excited that Senator McSally got that, because, you know, we have the playbook on that, right? We've run that race and we've won that before. So we know some of where those weaknesses might be for 2020. But to what Jaime was talking about, really, I think where some of those primaries from the right are going to come and really where the entire chessboard shifts is in 2022. This is after the redistricting, right? So we'll have a new congressional map, which will push people out of their districts potentially and into statewide race considerations.
Guys, as we wrap up, Jaime, is Ruben Gallego going to get in this race? We're not recording this at all. So
off the record?
Right, of course.
Off the record, absolutely he gets in this race. I think he sees this as a great opportunity against somebody that's viewed more as a centrist. And primaries are won by ideologies. Conservatives win Republican primaries, liberals win Democrat primaries.
Sam?
I'll take any opportunity I can get to agree with Jaime, so I'm going to say absolutely.
Sam Richard of Creosote Partners, Jaime Malera of Malera Alvarez. Guys, thanks as always. Good to see you.
Great. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at the show@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.